Don't be shy. Step a little closer. I've been waiting to welcome you to Fright Radio. The name is Reaper. Radio Reaper. I have much to tell. It's enough to make someone scream. What a coincidence. Let's step inside, shall we?
Haunters and Halloween fanatics, you are listening to Fright Radio, and I am your host, the Radio Reaper. Now, I don't know about you guys and ghouls, but I am super excited. It is haunt convention season, and that means one thing, that Halloween is right around the corner. It's a perfect time to start making some travel arrangements and head to any of these conventions for inspiration. And speaking of inspiration, on this show, we have an interview with Creepy Collection Props. You'll be able to see Creepy Collection this year at Transworld. His props, let me tell you, if you have seen his Facebook page, are amazing. Now on to the segments for this show. Our police officer from the RIPD, Ghoulish Cop, gives us the lowdown on the legend of the four thieves. In his segment, The Haunt Rant. Mr. Chicken unearths himself from his grave to return to the show and share some sculpting tips for haunting in the Hall of Illusions. Our resident creepy collector, the Toy Haunter, shares with us his newest horrific finds. The Boneyard Creep himself provides a chilling story with Tales from the Creep. Dr. Mitsonian shares some safety tips in the Mad Lab. And our newest resident frightener, Grim Ghosts, gives us some Q&A with our musical guests who are kicking off the show, the Young Werewolves.
I'm driving down the road in my souped up Cadillac, and there ain't another car inside. I pass the graveyard, the headlights flash. It looks like I'm racing tonight. One hell of a ride. Oh, cause the zombie's got a 57 Chevy and he's never lost a race just yet. And I'm racing for my life tonight. I hope I live to forget it. Cause it's a zombie car chase. It's a death drag race. Cause it's a zombie car chase. We'll be right back.
Our bones are chilled deeper than the grave this winter, and we turn up the heat or huddle around a fire in the hearth, in hopes we can stay warm and ward off a case of the flu. Not a bad idea, since the Centers for Disease Control estimates some 36,000 people die of flu-related symptoms every year. But there was a time when flu-like symptoms caused widespread panic, and its appearance heralded almost certain death. Certainly the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic was amongst the worst diseases to grip the world, infecting 500 million people globally and killing 50 million to 100 million of them. But even worse than that was the Black Death, the bubonic plague that struck the medieval world between 1340 and 1400. The global population at that time was only around 450 million people, and it's estimated about 100 million of them were killed, or nearly a quarter of the world's population. As is probably well known, symptoms of the plague include fever, chills, muscle cramps, and most distinctively, the formation of buboes, hence the plague's name, bubonic plague, or huge blisters under the armpit, in the groin, or on the neck that would burst open and ooze pus. Urban legend even says that the well-known nursery rhyme, "Ring Around the Rosy," is related to the Black Death, that the rosy rash sung about was a symptom of the plague, and the posies of herbs carried were a form of protection and to ward off the smell of the disease. The line, "Ashes, ashes, we all fall down," was said to infer the cremation of the bodies after the sick literally fell over and died. Alternatively, the ashes were actually a sneezing sound, which is what plague victims also presented. Modern folklorists doubt the veracity of the song being related, but certainly certain aspects of the song do ring true. For example, not everyone was affected if precautions were taken. Think of the long-beaked mask the so-called plague doctors wore, which they typically filled with garlic and aromatic herbs as they made their rounds of infected patients. However, curiously, there were four specific people who also escaped the ravages of the disease, even though they also came in close proximity to those infected, as well as their possessions, and since then, they've been come to be known as the Four Thieves. The legend of the Four Thieves revolves around four brothers who lived in the French city of Marseille, who made it a habit of robbing the homes of the people that had died from bubonic plague. Initially, they were ignored because it was thought they would ultimately succumb to the disease, as most people did, who came in contact with the dead or their possessions. But as time wore on, the people noticed the thieves apparently did not succumb, nor did they grow ill, but rather they grew ever more brazen. They even resorted to helping dispatch the ill earlier than their time by strangling them in their beds. In the end, they were caught and sentenced to death for their crimes, but the magistrate first wanted them to reveal the secret of how they were able to survive the ravages of the plague without getting any symptoms. The thieves refused to reveal their secret unless they were given clemency in exchange. The magistrate agreed, and the thieves revealed that they would coat their clothes in a special concoction made of essential oils, herbs, garlic, and vinegar, and then soak rags in it, which they would wear around their faces. While it is said the thieves were put to death anyway afterwards, the miracle of the mix came to be known as the Marseille vinegar, but today it's more commonly remembered as Four Thieves vinegar, and is said to have subsequently saved many lives afterwards, particularly when there were outbreaks of plague in years after. Today the story of the Four Thieves has been twisted and stretched and put in places whenever widespread death has happened, even including New Orleans, when plague broke out there between 1914 and 1920. The original recipe for the Four Thieves vinegar is 4 ounces of dried rosemary tops, 4 ounces of dried sage flowers, 2 ounces of dried lavender flowers, 1.5 ounces of fresh rue, 1/2 ounce of camphor dissolved in spirits, 1/4 ounce of sliced garlic, 1 dram of bruised cloves, and 1 gallon of distilled wine vinegar. I'm not sure if it would fend off symptoms of the flu, but considering the sometimes lethal results that accompany getting a flu shot, I think I'd put my faith and trust in Four Thieves vinegar to keep me warm, safe, and plague-free this winter.
The Toy Haunter.
Welcome back, horror fans, to Fright Radio. The Toy Haunter here, ready to talk about a Very fun line that was released last month by Funko Toys, and that is the horror classic vinyl figure Mystery Mini line. Now, Funko has been releasing the pop culture vinyl line, such as Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, Disney Pixar, WWE Superstars, those things. And with much anticipation and by request, they have finally released the Horror Mystery Mini line to our liking. So this line can only be found in comic book stores and specialty toy stores. You won't find them in Toys R Us or anything like that. So you will have to do a little bit of hunting, but they are easily accessible pretty much at any comic book shop that is near you. Let me quickly talk about the packaging. The package is really cool. They're just a small little 3-inch box. They are in a plastic wrap, so they are sealed. You do not know what is in there, hence the Mystery Mini. They are packaged 24 to a case, and that is on purpose. That is kind of how they made the limited quantity of some of these characters in the line. Now, there are four that are highly in demand. There are two that are extremely hard to find, and the rest are packaged pretty regularly in the cases. So I'm going to talk about the characters, and I will tell you your chances of finding that character in the packaging or in a case when you go out and hunt for these vinyls. Okay, so I'm going to go basically character by character. There are 24 pieces in a package, in a case. And the hardest one to find, there are two. The hardest one is Billy from Saw. He is packaged one out of 144 characters. So for every 144 characters made, there was only one of him made. So he is extremely hard to find. To go along with Scarred Chucky, he is also one out of every 144. So he is a variant to the regular Chucky, who is the common character in a case. So there, he is packaged two per case. So two for every 24 characters, he is packaged the regular Chucky. And the only difference in between those two is Chucky's face is scarred on the other one. And so he is much more hard to find, obviously, and he is very sought after. Now, my favorite character in the line is Sam from Trick or Treat. He is a little bit harder. He is packaged one per every case, so one out of every 24, Sam from Trick or Treat. And he is my favorite. I have not found him yet. He is the one I am hunting for. After I find him, I will probably stop buying them because I don't really care to have the whole line. I just really want Sam. So now let me jump back into some of the more common characters in the line. And one of those is Michael Myers. He is packaged two per every 24, so two per case. Jason Voorhees, he is also two for every 24. And Freddy Krueger, he is also two for every 24. And then we run into another hard one to find, and that is Ghostface from Scream. He is packaged one per case, so one for every 24. There is also Captain Spaulding from House of 1,000 Corpses. He is also packaged two for every 24, so two per case. Then we get into one of the second hardest ones to find, and that is Hannibal Lecter. He is packaged one out of every 72. So he is not in every case. He is extremely hard to find. He's one of the ones that is sought after. It's pretty cool. He's got his flak jacket on. His arms are, tied up, and he's got his little face mask thing on. So it's pretty cool looking. Another character in the line is Ash from Army of Darkness. He has a variant, so he is his regular one is two out of every 24, so two per case. And then there's Blood Splatter Ash, and it's kind of weird because they made a variant, but they made him also be two out of every 24. So he's not really a hard one to get, and the variant doesn't make him more valuable one or the other, whichever one you get. So it's kind of weird. And they also did that with Pennywise from It. Both characters are two for every 24, so the only difference I see on Pennywise is that one has like a pink glove and the other one has like a lime green glove on his hands. Other than that, he's just one of the regular characters that are packaged in the casings. And then finally, we get to the last character, and that is Leatherface. The regular version of Leatherface is packaged two for every 24. And then there is Blood Splatter Leatherface, and he is one out of every 72. So he is another one to go along with Hannibal Lecter that is really hard to find. Okay, so that is all the characters, and just want to touch one more time. These are a Funko release, the Horror Mystery Line vinyls, and you can find them at comic book stores and specialty toy shops. These things are really cool. I actually have my Michael Myers hanging from a skull necklace I got during Halloween, and he is my ornament on my mirror on the inside of my car. So I get to sit there and have little chit-chats with Michael Myers, you know, everywhere I go and just look at him. So yeah, this is a fun line that was released in December. Lots of people have been buying them. You can find them on eBay as well. You can find lots of pictures on like Instagram or on the web on these characters. But my suggestion is just to go out and buy a couple. I try to buy a couple every weekend when I go by the toy store and check it out. Just hoping that I can get Billy or Sam or the Scarred Chucky. You know, one of those three very hard ones that I've been really hunting. So. Yeah, go out and buy these toys. These things are fun. They're good for all the horror fans, all the Halloween fans out there. It's a cool line to have, and it is a newer release. So go check it out at your local comic book store. That is the Funko Mystery Minis Horror Classics line. Toy Hunter, and I will see you guys later.
The Hall of Illusion.
Good evening. I'm Mr. Chicken, and you're entering my Hall of Illusions. I was listening to the last two episodes of Fright Radio while sculpting an old hag mask, and I was trying to figure out what to do another segment on for my return to the show. Suddenly I realized I was staring it in the face, quite literally, so pick up your sculpting tools and let's talk about sculpture for haunting. There's a lot of information online about sculpture, so I want to focus on some ideas you won't hear as much. Specifically, these are the sculpting tips I wish someone had told me when I started out. There are basically four types of clay you want to know about for haunting. Air-dry clay, oil-based clay, water-based clay, and oven-baked clay. Because each one behaves differently, I'm structuring this around them. Now, if you're just starting out sculpting props, I recommend using an air-dry clay. I made most of my haunt characters out of Crayola Model Magic. It's a really cheap air-dry clay that has a bit of a learning curve because of its quirks, but for making quick sculptures, it's great. You won't be able to get the kind of detail that even a higher-end air-dry clay could give you, but it's great for getting to understand what makes a cool sculpture. The big advantage of air-dry clays for beginners is that your sculpture is your final product. You don't need to mold and cast to get a usable prop out of it. The main problem most people experience with air-dry clays, though, is cracking. This happens because water is evaporating from the material, causing it to shrink. When the outside dries and shrinks faster than the inside, you get the cracking. Oil-based clays are my favorite. I like to use a clay by Chavant called NSP Medium, which stands for non-sulfur plastiline with a medium hardness. I used to think even the soft was too hard, but here's the trick. You're not supposed to just start using the clay right out of the package. Oil-based clays are meant to be heated, so they soften to a comfortable consistency and then applied to your armature in the approximate form you're looking for. An easy way to do this is to line a box with aluminum foil to keep the oils from leaching out of the clay, and just position a light bulb above it. Slice off smaller pieces of clay and leave them in the box for a short while to soften up. Then you can begin sculpting. When the clay cools down to a point where it's too stiff to easily work with your hands anymore, you can either warm it up some more, or move on to using your sculpting tools to work it into a more refined shape. In water-based clays, the one you want to look at is called WED. That's W-E-D. It was developed for Disney to sculpt the characters in the theme parks. WED differs from other water-based clays in that it has added ingredients, so it will take longer to dry out. The trick to WED is much like the Chavant. Right out of the package, WED clay is very soft and easy to pile onto your armature and squish around. It's nice to wear gloves at this stage so your hands don't get caked in clay muck. While you're playing with the forms, if you ever leave the sculpture, you want to throw a plastic bag over it to keep it from drying out. You may even spritz it with a little bit of water, but you don't want to overdo it and make the clay too mushy. When you're ready to add the details, you want the clay to harden up a bit, so you let it dry out a little bit. You're just looking for it to firm up, not get too dry and cracked. And at that point, you can tool it, much like an oil-based clay. Note that the water-based and oil-based clays are not suitable for a final prop. Whatever you sculpt in them will have to be molded and cast. Maybe I'll talk about that in a future episode. Last is the oven-bake clay. Sculpey is the main brand you'll encounter. Honestly, it's not good for much in haunting because it's expensive and brittle. What it does well is make teeth. There are translucent colors available that, either by themselves or mixed with a white, can look very tooth-like pretty easily. Just take care not to introduce air bubbles while you're shaping them, or you'll see a bunch of white spots inside after you bake. I'll wrap it up there for this time. If you have any questions about this topic or suggestions for future segments, you can contact me directly at chickenhaunt@gmail.com.
The Boneyard. Tales from the Creep. Jedediah Cryer was a child murderer that lived in a hidden cave tucked high in the hills above the small town of Kingstown, West Virginia. It took the townsfolk of Kingstown many years to find out what was happening to their children. The horror only began to unfold when a hunter stumbled upon a cave and found the crude kitchen of Cryer. Having not a lot to eat, Jedediah was coming into town late at night and taking the children however he could. The hunter ran back to town to tell the horrors he had found. Gathering that night, Kingstown's biggest and bravest went in search of the child cannibal. In the cave, they found the remains of their children, many hanging from their hands with ropes around their wrists, like sides of beef, big chunks of flesh taken, some by the crude tools that were strewn about the cavern, and some from the jagged teeth of what the posse could only begin to process as a monster. Not knowing how far the cave went back into the hill, even the bravest of the men were scared to go and find what was capable of such atrocities. Lighting torches and arming themselves with everything they had, they walked into the darkness of the unknown. Walking past what could only be called a large pile of carnage, formed into a sick place where only a child killer would be able to slumber. Complete with the tanned hides of so many of their babies, the men only gained more fear and anger as every one of their senses heightened to a level they had never experienced. Just as the men decided to move along, Cryer struck without a sound. The first blow exploded young Jack's head like a ripe melon, making just as big a mess. Ben Rivers, wiping blood from his younger brother's head out of his eyes, was next. One quick uppercut sent his jaw up into his skull, sending all of his teeth into the dark crevices of the lair. Before one more man could be taken out, a shot rang, bringing the abomination to his knees. Taking every last man to get it done, they managed to hogtie Cryer and drag him back to the opening of the cave. Knowing that there was nothing that could be done about the horrors that had taken place in the cave, the decision was made to hang him from his wrists in the cave entrance, just low enough for the animals of the forest to have their way with him. Walking away, the men could hear the low laughter coming from a horrible killer, the laughter getting louder and louder the further away they got. By the time they got to the bottom of the canyon, the trees and the wind carried the evil chuckle straight through their very souls. Even after blowing out the lanterns to turn in after a long, horrific day, every single man couldn't tune out the sinister laugh. After a sleepless night, the men met and decided to make the trek one more time and finish the Kingstown killer. Upon reaching the cave, all was quiet. In the mouth of the tomb, where they left the cannibal, was only a rope and the left arm, elbow up, bearing the same bite marks seen on the children the day before.
Well, that's it for this month. The Boneyard Tales from the Creep. I hope you enjoyed this reading of The Kingstown Killer. It was written and arranged by myself. And I hope to be bringing you something scary every single month. So, again, thanks for listening. And keep killing it, my friends.
The Young Werewolves Gala Monster Rally.
In the gala monster rally, well, Frankenstein is coming for you. In the gala monster rally, well, maybe the wolfman too. In the gala monster rally, things aren't what they seem. In the gala monster rally, you better get ready to scream. Cause in the dead of night, all monsters unite. Sharpen your claws in the gala monster rally. You'll hear the ravens calls in the gala monster rally. There's witches brewing the best in the gala monster rally. We hope you'll pass the test. Cause in the dead of night, all monsters unite.
Dancing in his moccasins. Originally for this piece, I wanted to have a recorded interview ready, but alas, the band's time did not allow for due to rehearsals for a concert on the 25th of this month. That being the case, I'm splitting this section across two episodes. This month we'll have a basic history and overview of the band. Next month, I hope to have a fully recorded interview and some more songs. Okay, to start, here's some background on the band. The Young Werewolves were a Philadelphia rock band that formed in 2002. The band is a power trio, starting with Nick Falcon on vocals and guitars, Dana Kane on vocals and bass, Johnny Wolf on vocals and drums. They met after guitarist Nick Falcon posted ads on the internet and in music shops searching for musicians interested in forming a band with a sound like the Ramones meets the Buddy Holly. Add beef and beer. All greasers, please apply. The trio officially played together on Halloween 2002. The Young Werewolves have been reviewed by such magazines as All Music, The Village Voice, Maxim, Rock and Roll, Tattoo, Hot Rod, Fangoria, and other associated horror magazines. The Young Werewolves have been attracting attention from the underground press and steady airplay on special radio for years. This has enabled them to have a steady touring schedule. On the Halloween side of things, they have been one of the house bands for the annual Philly Zombie Prom since it started in 2007. In fact, the band goes back to the first Philly Zombie Crawl at Abilene's Bar on South Street back in 2006. Both events are local to the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania area. Some other events of note are a headline at the Costume Ball for the National Haunters Convention in 2010, Zombie Go-Go in Wilmington, Delaware, Wicked Winter Art Show at the Frame Shop in Wilmington, Delaware, and Chiller Horror in Parsippany, New Jersey, That is another horror show. Their music has been licensed for broadcast on such shows as MTV The Real World Season 15, AMC's Monster Fest 2007, Showtime's Shameless 2011, USA Network's Burn Notice, Spike TV's Blue Mountain State. Their first album, the self-titled The Young Werewolves, debuted in 2006 and was a hit. They followed that with Cheat the Devil, which was released in 2008. Sid Haig of Rob Zombie Movie fame was the executive producer on it and is featured on the cover artwork. He also provides introductory narration on the track Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. In 2011, the Young Werewolves released their third album, Sins of the Past. This is first for them with the incorporation of saxophones to their music. I first fell in love with their horror rockabilly sound when I first heard them at the National Haunters Convention in 2010. It makes excellent music to do Halloween-related activities to, or just listen to when you want to listen to some good horror rock music. I'll finish this section by reading answers to some of the questions the band was able to get back to me in time for this piece. Question number one. How do you describe your sound? Psycho pop, rockabilly? Basically, we play rock and roll with a lot of different flavors mixed in. Question number two. What are each of your favorite music styles to listen to? Dana is musically schizophrenic. So everything. Okay, maybe no pop, country, or gangster rock, but everything else. Question number three. Do each of you love Halloween? Dana's birthday is Mischief Night, so it's been a favorite of hers forever. Question number four. Are you working on a new album? If so, do you have a release date? We're currently still writing. We know we're taking a while between releases, but we really like to make sure they are good songs before we cut them. They're definitely heading in a great direction. Can't wait to hit the studio again. We're considering a digital-only release, possibly with a vinyl 45 being available. At this point, the possibilities are endless, and we're brainstorming through the recording process. Question number five. Future tours or concert dates? We are playing Twisted World, Villains and Vixens, March 29th and 30th. The Dead Milkmen are also playing that gig, so we're stoked about that. Here's the link. I'll provide that later. Any pet owners? Dana has a black German Shepherd adopted when she was 2.5, freed to a good home from a paper. Their loss, her gain. She's an awesome pup, very wolf-like in appearance. Johnny has a Rottweiler who's a big, sweet girl, too. Well, that's all the Q&A I have for now. Again, I am looking forward to recording an interview with the band for our next episode. In addition to Twisted World, Villains, and Vixens, they will be playing one more bar and grill in Tabernacle, New Jersey on January 25th. I'll place these links online where you can get their tour info and purchase their music. Till next time, listeners, this is Grim Ghost and Dark Service to the Nightmare That Is Halloween, signing off.
Alive! It's alive! It's alive!
Hello everyone, this is Blacklight Mike, also known as Sensei Mike. I'm a special effects makeup instructor with the Ducray School of Art here in Plainfield, New Jersey. And I'm here to talk about makeup for your haunt. Today we're going to talk about some common sense things. We're going to talk about health and safety considerations. A lot of us tend to work without a thought for health and safety. We work with materials that are toxic, and even if they say they're non-toxic, they can cause problems. Let's start with plaster. Everyone works with plaster. You must wear a dust mask when working with plaster. Plaster can get into your lungs and stay there. There are silicas inside some plasters that can cause silicosis and problems down the road. You do not want lung issues from breathing in dust. Same goes for working with wood and any kind of power tools that work with wood. If some woods are exotic and contain chemicals that will irritate your lungs or cause problems, like I said, down the road. You just don't want to do that. You want to keep your lungs healthy. Also, think about using alternatives. A lot of people like to use silicone sealants, the tubes of silicone caulk that you get from the hardware store, as a cheap condensation tin silicone for making prosthetics and things. It's a good idea, and I'm all for being frugal, but please, please, please do a patch test before you apply this stuff to your face. And what is a patch test? It's what we in the special effects makeup community do to ensure that the products we're using on our actors and models doesn't affect them in an adverse way. And basically what you do is you take a sample of each of the products that you're going to use on someone. In the case of the silicone, a dried silicone prosthetic that you might have made from this material. And you apply it a tiny little bit, usually in the crook of your elbow. And any adhesives that you might be using, spirit gum or prosade or prosade, depending on which way you like to pronounce it. Any of the materials, telesis, latex, these are things. Put a little dot of them on the crook of your elbow and put a Band-Aid over it. Mark the Band-Aid to say what's underneath it. Wait a day or two, and after a while, take the thing off and see if there's any redness or irritation or if you feel itchy. This is the way to detect whether or not you have a potential allergy to one of your products that you're using. Also, ventilation is important. A lot of us use the polyurethane expanding foams that you find in the Home Depot to fill out masks and heads and things, you know, to make things rigid and whatnot. The material is great, it's cheap, but it leaches formaldehyde and cyanide and God, all types of gases. And they're horrifyingly bad. And you may not even smell them as the stuff cures, but you have to take this into account. These things are coming out of that when they degas, and you need to open windows. Even the regular foam products that you may buy from Smooth-On or any of these larger companies that sell these things as a regular thing, the material leaches poisonous gas. It needs to be ventilated. Wear a respirator. Make sure there's a window open. You have some sort of ventilation. Otherwise, this material could build up inside. Same with latex. Latex leaches ammonia. Ammonia is in the latex to keep it from molding and coagulating. It also causes a horrible irritation inside your body if you don't ventilate your area when you're working with latex that's curing, because the ammonia has nowhere to go but out. And as the latex cures, it goes into the atmosphere and you will breathe the latex. So, you know, the ammonia rather in the latex. These are things just to consider. Even talcum powder has a tendency. You know, you may be powdering a makeup at the end. Talcum powder can get into your lungs too. I like to work with a small fan near me just to blow things away from myself and the actor as I'm applying the makeup. These are all common sense things. We'll talk about more interesting aspects of makeup. For now, I'm Blacklight Mike. I like to be called Sensei Mike in my classes. And I'm a special effects makeup instructor at Ducray School of the Arts in Plainfield, New Jersey. I encourage you to come out to my two courses. I'm teaching special effects makeup and mask making now. And as always, every day is Halloween. Thanks for listening.
Appreciate you being here for our fourth show and being an interview with us. So, but let's just jump right into it, because for anyone that's listening to the show now that might not be familiar with Creepy Collections, can you give us a quick background on how you got started making props and how Creepy Collections itself got started and just what is the company about?
Okay, well, Creepy Collections started officially in the end of 2003, but we want to go back to when I started making props. We're going to have to kick back to 1998. Just like
old school flashback kicking in.
Yep, that's how far back we got to go. I mean, I started making props for my home haunt back. Wait. We got to go back to 1991. that's when I started making props. Not very good props, but they were props. Nevertheless, kind of like your stick figures with masks and costumes on and stuff like that. And those, you know, really cheap rubber masks that used to get at like the local dime, but that was pure Halloween back then. That was the fun Halloween stuff. That to me was what we're doing nowadays, not just as Creepy Collection, but as an industry in its infancy, was the late 80s, early 90s. And, you know, it was a lot of heart, a lot of love. And I just started doing that. And then about 1998, kind of was like, you know what? I've been doing this for a while. It's getting bigger and bigger. I was like, I ran into the haunted house industry, and I was like, you know, this is out there, and it's something that interests me, and I gotta stop doing this home haunt stuff, and I gotta really, really, really start looking into doing a professional attraction. So that's when I started my haunted house in New Jersey, and we were making props still for that, but we were making it a little upgraded than the home haunt styles, but, you know, still not what we're doing today. Mm-hmm. And after that, we kind of like, I went to this PA Haunter Gathering. I don't know if you ever heard of it. It's now what
now
is
the National Haunters Convention?
Correct.
Yeah.
I went when it was in its infancy stage, and it was in the back of a church. And it was one Memorial Day weekend. I had nothing going on. The haunted house wasn't open because we ran a summer seasonal. And I went there, and I was like, you know, Michael's like, why don't you come down? And I was like, all right, cool, I'll come down. He's like, you know what? I got a bunch of props from the haunt that I'm not using. I'll bring them down, and we'll do like a garage sale. He's like, sounds good to me. Well, back then, everybody went home with a door prize. And this was May 2003. And I went home with a door prize myself. It was actually, I wanted a zombie mask by Labatti. I don't know if you ever heard of him. No. Labatti, he makes really cool masks. And I wanted this zombie mask that I was going crazy for. And actually, the person, it was right before I won, that person won the zombie mask. I won a foam skull. And I remember I was like, I looked at this skull. I was like, what am I doing with this skull? I was like, I don't have a haunted house this year. This is what I got. I was like, I went home depressed, licking my wounds, I need the mask. And I went home with the skull. About a couple days later, I was bored, and I started detailing up the skull with some model paints and some liquid latex, and I was like, you know, and all of a sudden, I had my first prop. My first professional-grade prop was that foam skull, and I showed it to someone, and I was like, what do you think of this? And they're like, that's an amazing skull, man. They're like, yo, you could sell that. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'll give it a good shot. I was like, let's see what happens. And then one skull went into five skulls, and five skulls went into torsos went into corpses. And for 4 years, I stood on eBay with it all.
Yeah.
And a very small website. And we were just breaking small grounds because I didn't feel like I was ready to go to Trans World, ready to take on the big dogs of the industry yet, because I never went to special effects school. I never had any formal training. I've never even picked up a special effects book. I just did it, you know, and it was just developing this raw talent on my own. So I felt like, yeah, we needed some more time. So 2007, I went to Trans World for the first time after doing a few of the minor show circuits for a little bit because I wanted to get some show experience.
Yes.
So diving into the biggest show, I went to the little shows and, you know, kind of learned how to display and do all those things and talk to people and make sales and, you know, what people are interested in and looking at. So
can I ask you something about that too? Like just from someone that, you know, maybe one day aspires to do it him or herself, you know, how is it? How intimidating was it going out and just kind of learning like that at the shows initially? And, you know, I don't even know what to say about that, but just thinking about it, you know, like taking those first steps, getting out, especially going to Trans World, knowing how big it is, you know, what was that feeling like?
Well, I'll be honest. I mean, like we were like, you know, going to I stopped for a second. I was been in sales for a long time. So, you know, to me, talking to people, it just comes natural. I'm a talkaholic. I talk to everybody.
Yeah.
You talk Halloween and horror with me or my, you know, Godzilla, which is something else I love. But, I could talk for hours. But going to the smaller shows, you know, what it was is was an eye-opener. It was an eye-opener to seeing other people's stuff. You know, I went the first Trans World I went, and it's, I'm sorry, because I kind of got ahead of myself. The first sales Trans World we went as Creepy Collection was 2007. But my first Trans World I went to was 2002 and 2003, just as I was starting to make the props. Well, before I even made the props, I got to see the show for its entirety, see all the vendors.
Yeah.
You know, people I knew that ran haunted houses like John Denley, got to see them on another side of them doing this vending side and making stuff for the industry, which was really awesome. And I got to see, you know, companies like Gorgolore, who was, you know, not starting out, but still not, where he is today. And, you know, seeing, I think the first year I saw him, he had that that dragon costume that he just came out, like some kind of costume with, it was like a warrior thing with a skull, and it was like, it was
what you're talking about, yeah.
And, I mean, I was a fan, man. I was a big-time fan of everybody, you know, and all their stuff. So, you know, coming up and seeing that and then, you know, doing my haunted house, and then I was, like, always in the back of my mind, like, man, I could do this. You know, I think I could do this. I might not have all the training these guys have. I might have everything, but I know I have determination. I know I have desire. I know I have passion for this. And I know that with the right dedication, you know, it could happen. And so when 2007 rolled around and we were going to Transworld, was I nervous? Absolutely, I was nervous. I mean, I still have nerves till this day.
Yeah.
Every year I'm going to Transworld. I mean, I can't tell you that. I mean, sometimes it has to be like a few nights before, maybe a week before, I have the Transworld dream. And it's a dream of here I am at my booth with all these props and nobody's in my booth. They're in everybody else's booth, but my booth is like a, like you can see tumbleweeds going and nobody's buying nothing. I'm so scared to death. And that's how, you know, that's the anxiety level of going to a show like Transworld. Usually that dream never comes true. God, you know, knock on something wood. I got wood right here, but you know, we always knock it out of the park. But you know, it was definitely an eye-opening experience to see everyone, see their products, you know, and get to know the people. I mean, the most important thing out there that I think a lot of vendors, you know, not all vendors, but some of them don't realize is, like, you know, you got to know what it feels like to be in the haunter's shoes. Like, we've done haunt, so we know what it feels like. We know what kind of products they want, what kind, you know what I mean, because we were there, you know. And we also know great advice. Like, when we have customers buy from us, I spend a lot of time, especially new customers, people that never even opened a haunt in their first year, is actually telling them how to do it successfully, with avoiding all the pitfalls.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're usually taken by that because, like, wow, you know, we call the companies, nobody spends without even buying something this much time with me. And I'm like, well, I was like, you know, it's a small pond and, you know, you do better, I'm going to do better in the future. So I don't mind helping you out. You know, I want you to do good. I want you to become a big time haunted house, you know? And they're like, oh, man, thanks for all the advice. And one guy actually called me this season and was like, dude, I listened to everything you told me and I had a killer season. And I'm buying a bunch of props from you this year. Okay, go ahead. Yeah. I was like, thanks so much. I was like, I'm happy to help you. You know, and that was his first season. It's very rare for that.
Yeah.
That someone comes out of the gates their first season and makes good money. So, you know, Transworld 2007, we were there with a 10-foot booth, 10x10, with a couple, I don't know, maybe like 14 props we had, and a pig. And everybody loved this damn pig. And, you know, we didn't know what the hell we were doing. We were just we were learning how to be a prop company at that point. You know, we were learning how to make all these props and the pressure. And, you know, looking back now, it's kind of a joke because it's like we thought that was like the biggest thing ever, selling the Transworld and all the orders we had. And now that wouldn't even amount to like 2 hours or 3 hours of Transworld when we're there. You know, so it's like, you know, it's a joke. But to us, it was everything. It was the biggest, you know, test of, but you know, you got to learn to you know, crawl, then run, walk, and run, etc. So, yeah, you know, if anyone's out there and you're looking to be a vendor, I would definitely recommend, you know, coming up the long way or go to school. But, you know, schooling to me is people teaching you their ideas. You want to develop yourself as an artist and have your own ideas. And you want to, you know, like, no one taught me how to do what I do. I do what I do because this is how I taught myself how to do it. Mm-hmm. And, my paint schemes and everything else that we do, it's all hours and hours of dedicated time and energy to perfect, to get these techniques going. So anyone's capable. It's the question is do you have enough heart, enough desire to keep on the path to get there?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, that's where people fall short. I can't, you know, Jason, I could tell you, I'm not mentioning any schools, but we've had people walk through these doors to come work here, and they've come from, you know, makeup school and special effects school, and they walked right out pretty fast because they can't keep up. And they not only can't keep up, but they don't have the heart. They have the tool set that they were taught, but they don't have the creativeness. They don't have the heart to dig in and put in long hours and long days. You know, they don't, and that's where they fall short. And, you know, if you have heart and desire, passion, and are willing to do anything to get there, you'll get there.
I agree with that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that drew me to your props specifically. I mean, you mentioned something before, like when you first Transworld and, you know, you knew these certain guys and you got to take it all in and see it first before you ended up attending the show. And, I think a lot of us haunters, whether they're your home, starting out, novice or professional, I think we all have, I don't want to say idols, but people we look up to, because I think you guys are all artists. I mean, it's you do horror, it's the horror genre, but the things that you do is it's art. You know, to me, it's art.
Right.
You know, I really appreciate the time and the effort that you put into your props, just because that's inspired me to be practicing at home. So it's, you know, it's for me, it's great to have you on the show to talk about this stuff, because, you know, it's a drive that you give me, and I'm sure a lot of people that are going to be listening too, you know, see the things that you do. I know I had a lot of comments on our Facebook page, you know, about when I said, oh, we're gonna get to talk to Jeremy from Creepy Collections, and a lot of people said the same thing I'm saying right now, you know. Oh, Creepy Collections, awesome, have some of their props, can't wait for the new stuff, you know. Jeremy kicks ass at what he does, and I'm like, yeah, he does. You know, he could tell that he loves what he does, and you're the kind of person I want to talk to on this show, because that passion comes across, and, you know, it's, to me, it's great. You know, I appreciate everything that you do for...
Thank you.
You know, as an artist and for the industry. So
I think Batman said it best. You'll never have to say thank you.
True.
Because, It's just going to come natural to me to do these things. I tell you, you know, Jason, what I appreciate is way back in the days, I was contemplating going to a school called Art Institute in Pittsburgh, which had a special effects training course. And I wanted to do it. And I was going to do it. And then I had a house explode. My house exploded from a gas fire.
God.
Yep, I was trapped in it and lucky to get out. My application was on the table that night, and I was going to do it. And I guess maybe why I'm so, you know, passionate about what I do is because I was felt like I was given a second chance. You know what I mean? That most people would give up and just go another way. Some people would probably die or kill themselves in their situation. I've been with that because I came out of it with just jeans on. My whole house was gone. Jeez. But when you have that happen to you, you have something that bad, it gives you a foundation, a very strong foundation to build upon for the next half. And being able to find a home in the house industry and slowly but surely develop my talent at the same time on my own pace while working other jobs. And working these other jobs definitely helped fuel my passion, because I was everything from, you know, sales to a stockbroker to, you know, you name it, I've done it. And it only made me want to do this more, because I couldn't stand being in those environments, you know. Yeah, but, you know, I think my wife at one point joked around when she met me, I was a broker, and she was like, you know, now you do this, and I liked it better when you wore a shirt and tie every day to work than how you look. So I actually went out and bought these shirts, like T-shirts that have like ties and shirt. Yeah. And I used to wear them to work here and get them all full of blood and everything and come home. I was like, is this good? Like, you know, that, yeah, she actually thought it was pretty funny too, but she's like, no, I like the other shirt and tie. No, I didn't. And that's, you know, you got to stay true to who you are. And Transworld was amazing the first time I ever saw it. I mean, it was at Rosemont in Illinois. And it was like, wow. Like, wow. It was like heaven to me, you know. And, I just wanted to get in and see what I could do, you know. And, you know, people, you know, when you're coming up and obviously, you know, you got to take time to develop. And, you know, one thing I've learned from working at major companies in the past was, you know, some if they wait to refine something to the point of perfection on products, then sometimes they'll miss the market. And they rather refine the product while it's out there in development. You see that a lot of times when you buy products and, you know, your first generation stuff, oh, it's cool, but then there's this glitch, and then there's a guy, but then the second generation comes out and those glitches are gone, and, you know, by the fifth or sixth generation product, it's perfect.
Yeah.
That's what I kind of did with eBay. You know, I went out there and I refined my artistic abilities with each and every product and made it better and better and better, and didn't stop making it better. And, you know, till this day, you know, keep constantly changing and developing and pushing what we could do and how we could do it. Never satisfied and always trying to break new ground. Anything's possible.
Yeah.
You just gotta have heart. I mean, like, know, I was telling my doctor the other day about I worked one season with a tooth abscess that I had a golf ball in my mouth for 3 days straight because I had to get props done. It was September. It was no stopping. I had to keep going, and I was not going to let this painful. You know, I was sipping things through a straw while working because I couldn't move my mouth. But props were getting out the door. You know, my dad had a seizure, not a seizure, I'm sorry. He had a stroke October 14th in my shop. And I had a huge order going out. And I loaded him on the ambulance, and I was like, Dad, sorry, I can't come right now. I have this big order going out, and it has to leave today. I was like, I have to do some finishing work. Because as soon as FedEx picks up at 7 o'clock, I will jump in the car and come to the hospital. He was like, he was coherent. He was like, okay, I understand. You know, he knew that it's my Halloween season and that it's only coming once. Yeah. You know, it's always like that. You know, it's just always something goes wrong. This October was the same situation. My mother fell down a flight of stairs on October 4th while going out to lunch in Manhattan, New York, and I get the phone call, and they're gonna amputate her wrist. They're gonna. God. Yeah.
Send you some Lucky Charms or something.
October, I'm telling you, I need it. And my brother calls me up, and he's like, you better get here. And I'm like, Thomas, yeah, this my brother's name is Thomas. And I'm like, are you crazy? I got to close my shop. I was like, I've never closed my shop in the history in October. And we had to take a half day and close. I think I left here at 4 o'clock. Next day, though, she was fine, wrist not amputated, surgery, and I was back to work. You know, so it cost me about 5 hours. But, you know, comes that time of year, everything else has to stop. Everything has to, you know, you have no choice. That's a matter where the heart has to take over, you know. And that's October. That's September, August, September, and October, which I'm probably the most hated man in my shop in August and September and October.
You're cracking the whip, right?
Cracking everything, yep.
Oh, man.
Locking people down. You ain't going nowhere. Life, what life? This is. I think the worst part, one part is... Someone says, I want to go home, and I look at them and laugh, and I go, you are home.
So that's a little something out there for anyone that's ever said they want to go intern or work for
Jim. Oh, you don't want to come here.
Creepy collection. Stay in your warm houses.
Well, you know what it is? You want to come here. I'm going to be honest with you. I'll tell you why you want to come work here. You want to be a part of what we do.
I want to come there. So tell me. Now,
I'm going to tell you why. Because what we do here – is you work like the way we work. You come out and be like we are. You will be a beast. You will learn to be a beast, not only as an artist. Here's the problem. Here's the problem with a lot of companies out there. Artists, that's great. You could be the greatest artist in the world, but are you a good businessman at the same time? Mm-hmm. See, at one point in my life, I was a great artist, but not a very good businessman. And you won't go very far if you don't know how to play the game and also how to create for it. So what I mean by play the game is you got to learn how to run a business, how things have to happen, you know, that you have to be mature enough to handle the orders. There's a lot of artists out there that, you know, and you see them show up at shows and they're brand new companies, but they can't handle the pressure, the stress. They can't give up their lives. They can't commit to what they, you know, everything else matters. And unfortunately, then this is not the industry for you. You know, I tell that to my own staff, members here, you know. I tell them, listen, I'm sorry, you know, playtime's November. You know, we got to get the orders done. We're different than a regular business. This is not, if it doesn't excite you that your props are going to be the props that we're working on, that we're getting out the door, that we got to keep getting them out the door, you know, and you're making good money and this and that or whatever, and you can't get excited about this, then you should look for somewhere else to work.
Yeah.
Because I really don't care about that you need to go to a club. I don't care that you need to go to a movie. I don't care that you need to, you know, you need to breathe. You'll breathe when we all breathe. We move as one. It's very much a team atmosphere.
Yeah.
Even myself, I tell them, you know, I'm the type of boss, I'm not sitting from a window watching you. I'm in the trenches with you.
You're getting your hands dirty.
Yes, right. They're dirty right now as I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
But, you know, so you're going to learn the correct way to do things, how to build a business, how to also develop props. And, you know, besides that, too, you got to know, you know, what props and when to bring them out. I mean, there's always those situations, too. Like, the props, you know, timing the markets and this and that. But that's more of, you know, like if you're going to run the company, you got to start off really small. But we had people come through this door. I mean, I had one person last 20 minutes once. That was the quickest so far. 20 minutes, and they were gone.
20 minutes?
No, not 20 minutes. I'm sorry. 2 hours.
No, she worked for
20 minutes?
Was it?
No, it was 2 hours.
2 hours, but she did 20 minutes of work.
2 hours she was here, but she did 20 minutes of work. She trained, watching, and then we actually put it to work for 20 minutes, and then she never came back.
Ah, boo.
And she's a special effects artist, by the way. Wow. Not graduate.
Well, I wonder what she's doing right now. She didn't want to get her hands
on it. Ain't working in special effects, I'll tell you that. So, you know, that's it. I mean, we have one rule. You all, you know, I just keep going. Keep the props have got to go out. You know, here I am, Jason, it's 9:30 maybe, 9-something on a January night, and I'm still in my shop. You know, I'm here for a reason because we're getting new props done for Transworld. You know, and we have orders too to work on, but we're cranking it out. I could be home, I could be chilling, I could be relaxing, but that ain't gonna do me no good in two and a half, three months from now.
So you're in there, you're working hard, you're working late. So let's talk about the props.
Bang them quick,
huh?
Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about the props, man, because, I mean, you are making the creepy collection, and you're going to be bringing it to Transworld. Now, backtrack a little bit. This is actually going to be my first Transworld.
Oh, you're going to love it.
So I'm going to be awestruck. I can't wait to come see your booth and everything in person, because I tell you, I salivate every single time I see one of your new little sneak teasers and peaks that are up there. And
You know. Very gracious this year. I normally don't show any sneak peeks or.
Yeah, you're being good about it.
Oh, Val, don't look at me that way. No, because I don't. I don't show that much like I've been showing. Eyeball shots, yes. If you look back in my Facebook history, you'll see eyeball shots. Not full props that I've been showing. You know. Not full props. But.
Well, what do you. I don't know what you're willing to share or not share. I know you want to try to keep some things.
This way, I don't know if it's a little bit of being just, you know, overconfident, but I'll share anything. You know, listen, at this point, you know, I look at it this way. People know what I'm going to bring. They know what to expect out of me. It's the stuff that they don't know that, you know, is going to be awesome. But, you know, the game of the haunted house industry right now is kind of like a little bit weird, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like in a different stage. Horror in general, I think, too. It's not just the haunted house industry. I think the horror has lost its identity over the last few years and maybe in the last decade, and it's not what it used to be. And I think that, you know, The Walking Dead kind of saved it a bit, you know. And it's kind of like weird how great horror TV shows seem to be popping up, but they can't make a really good horror movie anymore.
That's true.
You know, yeah, and it's weird. I mean, I just watched a 1998 movie that back in 98 was horrible, and it's still better than the best damn horror movie that's out now.
That's because the only thing they can do is try to rehash the old stuff, and it's never going to be the old stuff.
Right.
So
that's also the haunted house industry right now. Everyone's trying to rehash old things, and it's like, you know, so we're trying to break a lot of new concrete. Every year I try. I have experimental ideas and props that we bring out, same as this year. You know, we're going to experiment with some new design. Last year was Fairy Tales, Scary Tales, which I did. I think we called it Scary Tales. Fairy Tales. I don't know. There's 100 million names for our props. But it was an idea I had for like 4 years that I wanted to do twisted versions of Scary Tales, Fairy Tales. And, you know, that was something new. And, you know, there was a bunch of new ideas we had. And we try, you know, Fear Flex bodies, the movable bodies. Now, this year we got, besides Fear Flex full bodies, we got Fear Flex dolls, so you can flex our evil dolls in any way you want. We got Fear Flex three-quarter bodies and half bodies, mid-range. So we're expanding heavily on that stuff. And
now, do you have a goal each and every year? Do you always put out – you come out with a line, but is there a set number of pieces you're always looking to bring? Do you try to top last year's number of pieces? I mean, how does that work for you guys?
Sales-wise, we always try to beat last year's sales. Period. You know, that's...
Well, I mean, as far as props, do you say, I'm going to build 50 props this year?
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, all right. That's funny you should mention that, because back in 2011, I think we were the only company to come out with 80 new props. at Transworld. And I don't really recall anyone having 80 new props. Maybe every company was doing 4 or 5 new props a year. But we just, you know, to me, you got new year means new props. You got to have new ideas, and I have a lot of them. So we came out with 80, and I knew for sure, like, we there was a lot of vendors out there that weren't expecting that much new props. So I knew in 2012 they were going to gun for my head. I knew they were coming for me. They were like, listen, you know, you live, you learn, you know. So I, in 2012, decided to come out with 300 new props for Transworld.
Wow.
And to show, you know what, I'm just going to show how much creative ability I do have, and I'm going to go for the gusto and just kill it. And that was one of the toughest Transworld shows yet. I mean, there were so many props everywhere. Everyone came out. I mean, I never forget, I'm not going to mention vendor names, I remember seeing a sign, come check out our 80 new props. And I turned around to Val and said, was I right? Was I right? So that's why we came out with 300. But, you know, since that, I've backed it down dramatically. That was like a lot. That was like a lot. I just wanted to prove to everybody it wasn't a fluke, that we are, you know, the real deal and here to stay, and we're going to make thunder and lightning and whatever the case may be. And, you know, so we came out with that 300, but to do it now. I think last year we had, 100 and something new props, maybe 160. This year, my strategy is a little different for 2014. I have no number in my head. So
whatever it ends up being.
I'm making stuff. And I'll tell you right now, I am making prop after prop after prop that's new. What I'm doing this year that's going to be different is my road crew keeps calling me to find out. They called me just the other day, the people I take with me, and they're like, how many new props we got? And I'm like, how many are we bringing? I'm like, I don't know. I was like, you know, this is my plan. I was like, I'm going to make a ton of crap. I'm going to make so much stuff in this shop that it's going to be everywhere. And then I'm going to pick the best of what I think are the absolute best of what I made. And that's the number.
So can you at least talk about maybe one or two things that so far to date for this year that you're super excited about? Any specific ones that really stood out to you?
Well, I'll tell you right now, I could definitely talk about a few things. These are not brand new ideas. They're just kind of my versions of them. So
yeah.
We did. All right. I don't know if you ever heard of a movie, but I'm pretty sure you have, called Cannibal Holocaust.
Uh huh.
Okay. I made a throwback to Cannibal Holocaust for this year. A lot of cannibals with a lot of strange mutilation victims and stuff like that. Very, 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 very nasty looking stuff. We'll also, you know, I of course bring in the zombie horde, you know.
Of course.
Yeah, that's one of our biggest things. It was kind of nice to go from the pig guy to the zombie guy, so I kind of appreciate that now, because I definitely didn't want to be known as the pig guy much longer. You know, everyone used to go, oh, you're the pig guy, and I'm like, oh, no.
Oh, no,
that's
man.
How I would be known as. But, yeah, so now we're known as one of the top zombies, if not the best zombies in the haunted house industry. We get rated, and I'm proud every year to have that. And we have zombies, lots of zombies, even though people are like, well, zombies are kind of like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, they're going to be just fine, trust me. The essence of a zombie is when you think it's dead, it keeps coming back. And that's exactly what these damn things do, not just with our props, but throughout the whole course of the horror industry.
They're timeless, really. I mean, even if Walking Dead was to stop tomorrow, I don't think people are going to stop liking zombies.
No,
you know?
No, I think it's metamorphosized a little bit, and like, so that's what we're doing. Yeah. Like, instead of just, you know, focusing on the Walking Dead, we're actually branching the zombie horde this year into three different versions. So, like, in the past, we focused on Walking Dead and Day of the Dead style stuff and Night of the Living, and now this year, we kind of have a mixed bag of nuts in our zombie repertoire. We're doing World War Z style, we're doing Walking Dead style, and also we're doing a little graveyard style, which is something we haven't done in a while. Cool. So we're bringing back that old, dirty graveyard zombie look, very dirty looking, no blood, no kill on it, nothing, just straight out of the grave. So we have those three styles there, and that's pretty cool. What, four? What's the fourth zombie? Am I forgetting? What? Oh, excuse me, Jason, yes. And the clown zombies.
Clown zombies.
I forgot about the clown zombies. Yes, you know, I kind of, you know, we do a lot of clowns, and last year I kind of got to, like, wanting to do clown zombies, and I was, like, over the summer, and what happened was a customer wanted to get 10 Fear Flex from us. He's a home horn, and he was like, you know what, Jerry, I love your creative ability. I love what you do. He goes, I'm not even going to tell you what I want. I want you to make me 10 of whatever you want. I was like, really? He's like, I'm not even going to pick them. Whatever 10 you come up with, send them to me. I was like, so not only do I have the ability to really go all out here, you know, and have some fun, because, you know, you get, you know, somewhere around August, I start cursing the new props. Like, it's like, you know, after you're making them so many times over and over and over and over, it gets kind of creatively boring. So to have an order like that come in, that I could actually get my creative juices flowing a little bit and make new things and make things that, you know, so some of the things I made for him were zombie clowns. And he went nuts. He's like, dude, I never even expected clowns, because he never did clowns. Now he's doing a whole circus theme this year for his home haunt. So he wants more clowns. But that's where I came. I was like, you know, the zombie clown, I don't think it's kind of been lost in the shuffle between, you know, The Walking Dead. You haven't seen a zombie clown on the show yet.
Yeah.
Like, so I was like, you know, it's something that I think makes the clown even more scarier is when it's a zombie clown. So we made a few of those this year too. So that's the fourth, Val's correct, the fourth branch of the zombie tree for Creepy Collection is zombie clowns.
I like it.
Yep. And then let's not forget about the zombie victims, which is something I was gunning for last year, and we kind of didn't have a chance to do it. So we have zombie victims this year. And they're not just your typical zombie victim with bites missing out. These are people that have their brains blown out and are themselves. Because they have been bitten. And I didn't think that, you know, if you're going to do a zombie haunted house and you have all these zombie props, you should have some zombies.
You got to have some victims. That's, you know, that's really a good thing to think about, because you don't ever, I think that's one of the things every time I've gone through a haunted house, if I see any kind of scenes that are set up like that way, it is kind of, you'll see the monster or you will see the zombie like you're saying. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I never actually see the victim.
That's where the haunted house guy comes into play, you see, the thought of the haunter. Because I think as a haunter first, not as a vendor. I say to myself, what would I want in my haunted house? Well, how would I want to see it? And then that's what I produce, you know. So obviously my mind elevates every year, and I say, okay, I think about more details and more little nooks and crannies that we could fill in into a haunt. And this is one aspect of it, is these, you know, and they could also be used as non-zombie. Like the guy I have, with the shotgun in his mouth and his whole back is blown out, is just amazing behind me. You know, obviously a suicidal prop. You know, we have another one with a 45 in his hand. I think it's a 45. I'm not too sure. I'm not up on my guns, but his side of his brain is blown out, and he has a hole, and he's holding the gun. The one behind me has a gun in his mouth, and it's going inside his mouth, and there's blood all over his mouth, and the whole back of his head is blown out. And I even went as far as making the back part that can go on the wall that comes with the prop.
Oh, so man.
His actual hair and underneath of the head goes on the wall with a blood splat.
So you can get all of it together and make your scene right then and there with all those parts.
Yep.
Beautiful.
Yep. So that's basically a lot of the zombie stuff. And then you got our killers and, you know, stuff like that we're working on currently now. And we're starting our medical props, you know. This one I can't let out, but I'm going to tell you right now, it's amazing. It's definitely an amazing new idea. And the reason why I'm not letting it out, because I'm still developing it, and it's got to even be tested yet before I could even talk about it. But tonight was the first night we're actually putting it together. So, God willing, everything holds and it looks great by tomorrow.
So something really, really cool can be waiting for us at Transworld.
Put it this way, no one's ever seen before.
You heard it here first, guys.
No one's ever seen this before. It's actually, well, you've probably seen the stylization, but you've never seen this particular way I did it. And pissed me off, too, is like I seen on Facebook, I was scrolling and scrolling and scrolling, and I seen one other prop company kind of have the same idea, and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. I was like, you know, they didn't do it exactly as I would do. It's like, you know, different chef, different soup. But the basis of it, it was there. And I was like, so I went specifically and said, okay, we're now changing the design because I don't want Me Too products. So let's go and make this totally different now and make it a whole different way than what we were planning to do. Because I was like, damn, that stinks. But, you know, it's kind of like that. You know, it's funny, too. I wonder if sometimes if other vendors sit there and go, hey, is this guy like got like a fly in my shop that, you know, how does he know how to make a frozen prop at the same time we're making a frozen prop? Or how it's just like sometimes that happens in this industry. We all have the same idea. I think it's like whatever gives us the creative juice probably ferments us all at the same time.
Right. Hey, you know what, though? It's everyone plays off of one another, too. I mean, it's still inspiration out there. So
yeah, you know, I don't even get upset anymore, you know? Like, yeah, when people try, I walk around and see something that kind of, because, you know, we're constantly evolving and changing what we do and how we do it and our paint styles and this and that. It's always different. So, you know, people always tell me, like, yo, don't you get it? I really don't care. You know what I mean? I think imitation is the best form of flattery.
Yeah, yeah. You know? What are some of your biggest influences? I mean, is there anyone in particular, artist-wise, that you follow for inspiration or even people that are doing the same thing, prop makers, anything like that, that you can maybe turn some of us on to?
Let's see. Who? Well, here's the thing. Who do I, you know, you're going to laugh at me when I really start this talking about this, because who inspires me really wasn't a prop maker. My main inspiration comes from actual, like, great individuals, like, and people that maybe not even have done haunted houses. Michael Jordan is one person I look up to. A guy who, you know, was told that he'll never shoot a basketball, that he was cut off his team, but yet became the greatest basketball player of all time for will and determination. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just one. Muhammad Ali, another one, you know, a guy who came out and changed the game of what he did with flash and flair. And, you know, as far as like prop making goes, if I had to look up, I mean, coming up, I mean, obviously Tom Savini was someone I looked up to and someone I loved and loved his work as a child. And this trans world, it was funny, too. We were at the booth, and we had a mob of people, and this guy comes up to me, and he's like, hey, my boss told me to come check out your zombies. And I was like, oh, cool. Now, we get that a lot, you know, because you'll get people that send the actual owners can't be at the show, so they'll send a representative, and they'll take the information and process the order later and what they like and stuff. So I'm like, oh, yeah. He's like, he's a big fan of your work. He's like, I was like, oh, that's awesome. I was like, thank you. And he's like, well, let me show you who my boss is. He goes in this briefcase, pulls out a Tom Savini business card. I turned around, and I was like in tears. And I was like, hold up. You're telling me he's a fan of my zombies?
Wow. That's a compliment right there. That's a huge compliment.
I was like, yo, I'm crying right now. I was like, this is like the best thing that could be told on the floor of trans world. I was like, yo, I'm a fan of his zombies. Never mind what he likes mine. I grew up on him. I love his work.
Yeah.
I was like, he's the reason I even, you know, did these things. You know, as far as prop companies, you know, there was just so many when I was coming up and my first eyeball in the industry. I mean, obviously I got to see, you know, Gore Galore and I, you know, look at his work. And I remember seeing him back in 2002, the Ghost Ride booth, man, you know, it was like, wow. I was like, you know, I wasn't even thinking about professionally becoming a vendor. I don't even think of that. I was just doing the haunt, which led into that with that skull. But, you know, because we weren't doing it no more. But, you know, it was amazing. John Denley was another one, you know, great haunter. Spent a lot of time with him in Boston, hanging out with him for a weekend. And then, you know, seeing him at Trans World and seeing what he was doing. And, you know, obviously I looked up to him. Rich Hanf was another one.
Yeah.
Guitar Master Hanf, you know. And ironically, got to get an order from him this year, which was like, that was like, you know, one of the greatest things in the world for me. Because, you know, you get a lot of orders, but when you get one of your idols ordering from you, that's when you know you come full circle. And that was when I was so nervous. I mean, we're building props for major theme parks, but that goddamn Rich Hanf's order makes me the most nervous.
I got to meet him probably the first NHC I ever went to, and I got to talk to him for a while. It was really a good experience and a good talk. He gave me
He's an awesome guy.
Yeah, he gave me a lot of that was the first year actually when I was doing the charity haunt. So he gave me a lot of good input on there. So it was definitely good stuff.
One of the best advice he ever gave me was, He goes, don't try to please 100% of the people 100% of the time, because you're never going to do it.
Yeah.
But if you can get 90%, he goes, you're doing something right.
Yeah.
I took that with me, and I said, you know, 100%, I'm gonna follow that advice, because it's true. You ain't going to please everybody. It's impossible. It's an impossible task. But if you can please 90, 94% of the people, then you're doing something damn well right.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So is Transworld the only place we'll get to see Creepy Collection this year, or do you guys have plans for other trade shows?
Well, this is the $1,000, $100 million pyramid question right now. All right. Every year we try, for the last few years, we've been going to like three shows a year. We were doing Transworld. We were doing we always call it the PA Gathering, but National Hornets Convention and Midwest. Now, as much as I like to get out there and hang out with everybody, it doesn't do anybody a bit of good that want to place orders with us, because the amount of time and effort it takes us to prepare for each and every show and build up props for each and every show also means, guess what? Our orders are slacking. So it's kind of like a real touchy situation, because it's like damned if I do and damned if I don't. So by going to these three shows, yeah, people love us. People want us to come. We have followings that people show up, especially at National Horrors Convention, and we also have it at Midwest now too. And they are asking us. We have people asking us starting November where we're going. And my answer is, I tell them right now, all that's on the table is Transworld. We get through that show, and depending on orders, and orders grow and grow and grow and grow every year there. If it's overwhelming, and by it was always overwhelming, but even more, then that's going to change the game a little bit. We don't want to fall behind, too much in orders, because that's really a dangerous situation. You want to take money. You want to be in business to take in orders, obviously, but you also want to make sure that you could deliver. That's more important than getting an order, is delivering your orders. And every show creates that bubble of, we have to stop production and now work on props for these shows.
Yeah.
So as of today, right now, Transworld is the only one we're doing. Could that change? Yeah, I mean, it could. Midwest, obviously, there's been a change with Midwest we heard about. Transworld bought Midwest.
Yeah.
As far as little shows go, I mean, Midwest last year was a record for little shows, meaning like not Transworld, an all-time record for us. I mean, for me not to go back, I'd be the biggest damn fool in the world to not go back to Midwest. Financially, it would be stupid of us, but I also have to make a decision. The decision is sometimes, how far behind we want to fall, if we're going to fall behind. Last year, we moved our shop, so we went to a bigger location, and that's why we didn't attend the gathering, National Hornets Convention. And I know this year they have us already as coming, but we haven't really confirmed that yet 100% that we were coming. Last year I could say, Jason, that it definitely helped us not going to the National Hornets Convention with our order flow. It really did. And that was the whole proof. So any decisions I make is going to come out of Transworld and how beastly our order flow is from Transworld. If it's really, really, really beastly, you're probably going to see us bow out of both.
Yeah. Hey, that makes sense. So if anyone's looking to see Creepy Collection and you haven't, book your ticket to Transworld and keep in the loop. I guess you would post things like this on Facebook and...
Yeah, we always let people know we're not going. if we're not going to go, last year we did the two shows, and, that was pretty cool. But I don't know, man. I really don't. Orders right now, we are coming off a record off-season sales-wise. I mean, it's to the point right now where I'm ready to stop taking orders right now until Transworld, because that's how much orders we're getting. I just got asked to do a Walking Dead birthday party.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, out in Brooklyn. They're throwing a Walking Dead birthday party for this guy, and they rented out this whole loft and stuff, and they, and this is in February, which I told the girl, I was like, you're kind of lucky, because I usually turn it down.
Yeah.
I was like, you're having it at the perfect time, which is February, and you're also having it while we're chock full of zombies at the moment. I was like, we got plenty of zombies on hand that, you know, any other time of the year, I'd probably tell you no. I don't know. You know, we'll try it. We want to do everything, but we also want to make sure we can take care of our people.
Yeah.
And that place orders.
Well, speaking of placing orders and everything, now, if anyone, after listening to this, wants to place an order with Creepy Collection, can you give us, you know, I know it's creepycollection.com, but if you want to promote and tell people where they could be going to take a look at everything, and also, what's the lead time on that? What's the best time for anyone to put an order in there, and when could they potentially expect it?
I'll tell you right now, Jason, we I always have these time of years, and time right now is here's the option. We could spend a lot of time. Like, people always say to me, oh, you know, because we're building up the new props right now, plus working on orders. So obviously, at this time of year, my tendency is going to go towards new props. So I'm actually working on new props exclusively, while other parts, like Val, will bounce back and forth between orders and new props with me. All the staffers, when they do show up, which is not very easy to drag them in during the off season, because they always seem to be sick for some reason. Yeah, you know, they're like, I think it's more like, hey, we just went through hell, leave us alone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, right now we tend to work on the new props more than working on the actual orders. We work for every like five or six new props we make, we might make one old prop. Start it and get it ready. Because really, there's no time value right now. Unless you're like a movie production, mm-hmm. You're not using it till next season. So what's the rush? I gave you a huge discount for that. So you're going to wait a little. Because I got Transworld looming. So we're about 6 weeks on orders. That's our lead time, 6 to 8 weeks as of right now. Our goal every season, and this season especially, is to clear out all our post-season, that's now, orders, but before Transworld begins.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to wrap up our off-season sales all out the door right before Transworld. That's what we're looking at. So that means people, right now we're working, any orders that came in November, we're working on those orders now, right now, this month. By next month, we'll be digging into December and January's orders, because the orders were huge for November, and they were huge for December. And even January's kind of in a beastly month, too, where we're taking in more orders as well. And I'm trying to, you know, send smoke signals to my other staffers and saying, guys, really, there is no more off-season. We really got to get moving here.
Yeah.
But, you know, once Transworld happens, what we usually do is we give a 90-day window on orders at Transworld if you fully pay. Deposited orders usually take about 180 because we do all the fully paid ones first.
Mm-hmm.
Then we work on deposits. But we get everything ready in the process during the whole time that we're working on fully paid anyway. But we just throw it to the side and we actually physically ready the fully paid first. The best time of the year to buy props, people always ask me, is now. And the reason why is we could spend as much time on a prop without any, you know, you get more than your money's worth. That's because I could detail one head for an hour, 2 hours, but come September, October, I could be detailing 25 heads in 2 hours.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just to keep up with the amount of orders coming in that are crazy. If you're really a detail fan, now's the best time. If you're just, you know, now even those props look good, don't get me wrong, but right now the props look really great because we could take our time and without pressure of, you know, oh my God, FedEx is coming at 4 o'clock, let's go.
Yeah, that's good to know.
Mm-hmm. So that's how we do it, you know, first ones in, get the first ones out, except, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, we never disappoint, you know, and we get our Christmas also. We do our Christmas orders first before I even start the new props. So people that order props for Christmas during November, we make sure we know who they are and we get them props out the door because we ain't going to ruin nobody's Christmas.
Yeah. So I guess, I mean, to wrap things up for this interview, I'm thinking, this is a question that's probably asked all the time, but I think every new year is a year that, you know, it's good to ask it again, is... You've been doing this for such a long time now. You're hitting it hard. You keep on growing. how does Creepy Collection expand, and I mean, what's going to drive you to keep on pumping out the most cool, the most creepy props in the industry?
Heart and passion, you know, basically, you know, the desire to want to be one of the best. You know, you just don't want to make, you know, in life, you don't want to make money. You want to make money, but you don't want to make money to make money. You want to make stuff that's going to make you money and be happy making it. You know, I've laid my life down for this business. It's my breath, my everything, because I love it. You know, it's me. It's what I, you know, it's who I am. That heart and desire is what will keep me in the game. It's not just a matter of, you know, making cool stuff that drives me. It's a matter of, you know, leaving my mark on this industry. And, you know, I thought it would be, you know, the next phase would be animatronics, and I ain't much of an animatronic builder myself. We actually import all our mechanisms from California. Yes. So, we don't have any animatronics builders, so it's probably not going to be animatronics. I got too many friends building masks, and you know what? I'm not interested in building masks. Honestly, I'm just going to stay doing what I do and just keep making it better and making new designs and new things that, you know, I feel, you know, that I like. That's basically what I try to do. I try to make things I like every year, things that I would get excited about, and, you know, and always never do the easy stuff. I always try to do the hardest stuff possible. Val's laughing in the background because she knows it's true. Because I always recite to her, but she's like,
I need to have an interview with Val, I think. Because
you would love it. Oh, forget it. But
Val, if you can hear me, you're next.
She hears you.
Be next up on Fight Radio, I think. And
have
in the background.
She said Kirk and Spock is in a nutshell. But, you know, I tell her, no, I just recited to her the other day with this prop I'm telling you about, the one that I was like, you know, I'm testing out before I talk, you know, talk about it. But she was like, she looked at me when I told her what I wanted to do, and she's like, are you out of your mind? You know how hard that's going to be, how much work it's going to be? And I turned around and I recited John F. Kennedy to her. And I was like, we don't go to the moon because it's easy. No, we go to the moon because it's hard. And that's it in a nutshell. When you have that stamped into your heart, then I don't think you're ever going to have a problem, you know, as long as you're breathing and functioning, that, you know, you're going to be contributing in some way or fashion to what you do and what you love to do. It just never gets stale, you know. You know, that don't get me wrong. It doesn't get stressful. There are days where I want to probably mass murder 90% of the people around me at one point. 100% of the people. I wouldn't want to murder myself, but, you know, my staff, and they're getting on my last nerve, and, you know, and even you know, you get a couple hours sleep for like a few weeks in a row, and you're not really, you know, functioning coherently, and the stress is building. Is that all fun? Not all the time. No, it's not. But when you choose this, that comes with the territory. And, you know, I tell everyone, remember the good times. Remember us riding go-karts at National Hornets Convention come this August. I was like, remember us eating dinners at Longhorns and all over the place where we go out and we're eating together as a team and enjoying the good parts. Remember that when it's really dark. Because it's not always going to be dark all the time.
Hey,
but we got to get through that.
The best way to make a zombie is to be a zombie sometimes, though.
I you know, been pretty much called that. I've been zombies, and, you know, yeah, I pretty much feel like that. I mean, I remember times when I was working a job and doing this at the same time and actually falling asleep driving on the way home. Not cool. At the stoplights, just falling asleep. You know, thank God I'm a New Yorker because we don't sleep very much. That's all I can tell you. So, you know,
I work in the city five days a week.
You're a cousin New Yorker, being from New Jersey.
Yeah,
so.
I'm a cousin New Yorker. Yeah.
You guys, actually, there's probably so many more New Yorkers living in New Jersey now that all the New Jersey people fled south more. So, you should just go ahead and change it to like York 2 or something like that. I don't think it's Jersey, really. The true Jersey is gone. It's all New York implants. And we could even spread that starting to Pennsylvania, too, now. You know, a bunch of people that implanted themselves there as well.
That's true.
Yeah. So that kind of, like, philosophy is spreading. But you know what? It's when you love what you do, you can't stop, you know. There's nights I have to be dragged out of here, you know, honestly. You know, and there's nights that I'm like sitting here, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and we got here at 9 a.m. and this will be like the 9th, 10th day straight of it. And, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm even trying to find the motivation myself to keep going, you know? And sometimes it's a song I'll put on, or sometimes it'll be, you know, something else, or a horror movie. And, you know, I'll reach down deep inside and go a half hour more, do another hour. You know, I think the latest I ever left here was 4:30 in the morning. It was back at 7. Yeah, but that's because of a customer who was picking up from Connecticut, Mr. Wayne. And he got here and he brought his zombie truck, his zombie bus. It looked like a prison bus, school bus kind of thing with a rating on it. And his battery died in front of my bay shop. And it died a few times on the way, and we had to jump him after we filled him up full of zombies. And, you know, like I said, I'm a kind of a talkaholic. And when he was here, we were drinking coffee, and, you know, he was like, "Are you tired?" I'm like, "Nah, I'm used to staying up to 4 o'clock in the morning every night. I'm good." It's like, I'm good. You know, but, yeah, it's all right. When you love what you do, it doesn't matter. You just don't care. You just want to get, you know, want it to be the best it could be. And, you know, what we want to see is, I want to see the next generation that's going to be coming up. I want you guys to realize that, you know, put down your iPhones, don't, you know, put down the iPads and think outside the box, you know, because doing this kind of work is not on a computer. It's in, you know, I very rarely have designs on a piece of paper. Everything comes out of my head every year. Every prop is made from my mind, not drawn. Yes. And, you know, you got to live a little bit, experience some things. And, you know, it's funny, too, you find inspiration in the least amount of things. I think, like, you know, one of the funniest inspirational things I ever seen was, I was watching the Katy Perry video and I seen her as this angel, and I was like, wow, I want to make an angel that's evil now, that looks similar but not the same, and I want to make it have black eyeballs that are iridescent and this and that and long, and it, we did it. And, you know, that's just, inspiration comes from the weirdest places, you know. But this new generation, you know, I kind of worry about them a little bit. We have, like, some workers here that are, like, 21, 22 that come in and out. And some seem even 18. And I try to talk to them as much as I can, because they're too much with their heads in their iPhones, which is banned in here, by the way. You're not allowed to have an iPhone or a cell phone with you while working.
That's a good rule.
Well, how could you friggin' paint or create something, exactly, if you have a phone in one hand? And you know what? There's nothing that pisses me off more than someone not paying attention to what they're doing.
As a cousin New Yorker, not being a New Yorker, going to work every day, I really wish, I get on my every last nerve. I see people walking around staring at their phone all day long. And I'm not saying that I haven't done it myself plenty of times, but it's oh, man.
Best was one time I was shopping, and this woman comes walking out of a store, and she has a phone right in there, like head into the phone, walking out into the parking lot. And I was like, I went to her, I was like, "Excuse me." She's like, "Yes." I was like, "You know, someone fell on the train tracks a couple of weeks ago doing exactly what you're doing. But if you haven't noticed, you're in the parking lot." And she was like, "Oh, my God."
I've seen people walk into walls. I've seen people trip and fall because of it. I've had people walk into me, and I knew they were going to walk into me. I didn't move out of the way. I just wanted to see them do it and see what their response
people
was.
Could say to me, "You're always on Facebook posting stuff." Yeah, I do post statuses. I do that through my iPad occasionally, you know, but it's not, you know, attached to my hip. I do have a lot of computers just because I have a business, but, you know, it looks like I'm always on. But, you know, we are, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, people, you got to be creative. You got to be physically doing stuff with your hands other than playing with your iPhone. You got to be creating and painting and doing stuff like that. And, you know, the more time you do that, the more successful you're going to be if this is what you want to do. And also, you got to learn to put everything else aside and just, you know, focus on the work in hand while it's here. Because this is like, you know, it's a privilege to say you have a lot of orders in November and December. It's not something that's a given. Not everybody's going to have that. But you have to earn that respect from your customers, that they, you know, want your stuff even during the time. Like, you know, I always tell people, imagine what it's like to sell Christmas trees in January. Same difference as selling Halloween props in November.
Yeah. So. Well, Jeremy, I really appreciate you taking the time to give us an interview for Fright Radio. I'm looking forward to seeing everything that that we've been talking about in Trans World. I'll definitely stop by the booth and say hello. And
come on by.
Say again?
So come on by Trans World. And I must tell you, Jason, we do know the best spots to eat in all of St. Louis.
Hey, then let's go out. Let's go out.
You don't not have to eat at the Renaissance, my friend. In fact, if you value not having a bloated body and face with all the salt they put in their food, I would recommend not eating at the Renaissance.
Hey, I'm looking you up in Trans World.
I'll show you the best places to go and eat.
We're going. You heard it here first, folks. I'm going to be stuffing my face with Jeremy at Creepy Collections.
That's right. That's right. It's good food over there. We know.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. And, hey, keep on kicking ass in your shop.
Like I said, that's going to happen. Like Batman said, no need to say thank you. No, that's coming. But thank you for saying it. Cool. We're not going to stop.
Can't stop, don't stop.
I don't know how to stop. No, I don't. I'm not going to.
So that wraps up this Fright Radio. More of this episode and the show, head on to frightradio.blogspot.com. And remember, you can always join our Facebook group, Fright Radio, on Facebook. Until next time, fiends.
Ha 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 ha.